Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for February 23rd, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with Alan Smirka about how different G protein subunits contribute to neutrophil migration. Neutrophils are white blood cells that function in innate immunity. Neutrophils follow chemical cues to migrate to sites of inflammation, so being able to migrate along a chemical gradient is critical for their proper function. The chemical cues that guide neutrophil migration activate G protein-coupled receptors, or GPCRs. GPCRs are transmembrane proteins that, when activated, in turn activate intracellular G proteins. The G proteins activated by GPCRs during neutrophil migration are made up of three subunits, alpha, beta, and gamma. Upon activation, the alpha subunit dissociates from the beta and gamma subunits, but the beta and gamma subunits remain associated with one another. This results in the release of two G proteins, G alpha and G beta gamma. Both G alpha and G beta gamma have signaling activities. The signaling events triggered by G beta gamma during neutrophil migration have been reasonably well characterized, but whether G alpha contributes much to neutrophil migration has been unclear. A new study from Alan Smirka's group has examined the distinct contributions that G-alpha and G-beta-gamma make to neutrophil migration, and they found that G-alpha contributes to migration in more ways than just being required for the release of G-beta-gamma. Smirka spoke to me from the University of Rochester. Hello, Dr. Smirka. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
In order for cells to migrate up a chemotactic gradient, they first have to polarize towards the chemokine source, and then they have to migrate in that direction. Does GPCR signaling control both polarization and migration, or just migration?
It actually controls both. I mean, cells can polarize without chemokines or without GPCRs, but they can basally polarize, and what the GPCRs does is enhance the polarization and points the poles in a particular direction so the cells can migrate in that direction.
Once the GPCRs are activated, how do events downstream of GPCR activation help neutrophils migrate up a chemoattractant gradient?
Well, you'd be surprised. Cell migration along a chemoattractant gradient seems like it would be a relatively simple process, but the things that get activated downstream of the GPCRs in the cell are incredibly complicated in terms of what has to be done in order to orient the cells in the proper direction and to get the cells to polarize, to be able to move the front of the cell forward and lift the cell off the back in order to make that happen. There's a complex series of events that have to happen inside the cell. And another thing that has to happen is that the cell has to detect very shallow, very small differences in chemoattractant concentration across the surface of the cell. So this area has really, people have been working on it for a long time to figure out the mechanisms for how this happens. And it still hasn't been worked out. There's still lots of things. So basically, you know, there's a few simple things that I can point out. So when you activate the GPCR, you release the G-alpha and the G-beta-gamma subunits, and those are proteins that directly activate signal transduction pathways downstream. And there's quite a number of proteins, particularly downstream of G-beta-gamma subunits, that have been shown to be very important. These include things like lipid kinases that generate a lipid gradient, particularly phosphatidylinositol 3, 4, 5, trisphosphate. This is a major lipid that's involved in telling the cell what the front of the cell is versus the back. And so the kinase that makes that, PI3 kinase, is activated by G-beta-gamma subunits. There are a number of small GTPases that regulate actin polymerization and cytoskeletal reorganization. There are phospholipases that regulate calcium to regulate adhesion. So in order for a cell to move, it has to adhere and then de-adhere. And so phospholipases and calcium are very important with that. And, you know, I could go on and on. Most of these things are directly activated, or many of them are directly initiated by the beta-gamma subunits downstream of the GPCR.
And so how about the G-alpha subunits?
Well, that's really what this story is about, is the G-alpha subunits, because a lot of work has been done, and beta-gamma, that's actually what my lab works on, is the G-beta-gamma subunits, and we've been trying to figure out new roles for G-beta-gamma subunits, and we're investigating roles for beta-gamma subunits. People don't really think, or hadn't really thought, in fact, there are multiple papers published that say that alpha subunits, the alpha I that's released, so these GPCRs are coupled to the G alpha I family of G proteins, and when they get activated, you get activated alpha I, GTP, and beta gamma released. Nobody has really found a function for the alpha I GTP or alpha I at all other than to regulate G beta gamma, and in fact, papers have said G alpha I itself is not important other than as a regulator of G-beta-gamma. And so that's where this story comes in. We think we found some new roles for G-alpha-I.
Traditionally, it's been a little difficult to separate the functions of G-alpha-I and G-beta-gamma. How did you get around that problem?
Well, you know, a lot of science is serendipity, and this was somewhat serendipitous. We weren't looking to, you know, separate G-alpha-I from G-beta-gamma, but what we had been doing in the laboratory for a number of years is trying to find small molecule reagents that we could add to cells that we know bind to G-beta-gamma subunits and influence their activities. And we'd found inhibitors over the years that we've been using for various assays to figure out what's going on. But we also came up with these activators, meaning an activator that bound to G-beta-gamma subunits, released an activated beta-gamma subunit without involving activation of alpha subunits, without involving activation of the receptor or any of the possible proteins that could be interacting with the receptor, just to get a pure beta-gamma signal through using this reagent. And then this reagent is the key, and basically it's sort of a deductive reasoning type of process where we'd add it, we'd see what the effects of adding this reagent that activates beta-gamma by itself, and compare that to things that activate both alpha and beta gamma, and, you know, try to figure out what's missing. When we activated beta gamma alone, the cells had a dramatically different phenotype than when we added a reagent that activated both alpha and beta gamma. And so we started trying to figure out, you know, why is this phenotype so different? And in the process of that, uncovered what we think are some new roles for alpha subunit signaling.
Using that reagent, what did you learn about the different contributions of G-alpha-I and G-beta-gamma to neutrophil migration?
Well, one of the things that we found when we just activated beta-gamma was cells that had been basally polarized. So there is some polarization of cells in the absence of GPCR activation, but the GPCRs enhanced that. But when we added this compound that activated beta-gamma alone, all the basally activated cell became completely non-polarized. So they've turned into a circle. They kind of look like a fried egg. So that was very unusual. We completely lost polarization. And then the other thing is they wouldn't move. They were stuck. And so they seem more tightly adhered to the surface. So these cells that we were examining were actually adhered to an extracellular matrix. And they seemed to adhere more strongly. And so what alpha seemed to be doing, and we found out two different roles for alpha. One is it's controlling polarization, and this appears to be through what we believe is a traditional alpha-I regulating cyclic AMP levels, which regulate protein kinase A, and that protein kinase A is involved in the polarization. So alpha-I is required to modulate cyclic AMP to allow for the cell to polarize. That's one aspect of what we found, but with the other aspect that we're still investigating and I'm very excited about is that alpha-I may be regulating adhesion. And so you can imagine you might need to regulate adhesion. As a cell moves forward, it needs to adhere, but this has to be dynamic. It has to release, and so there must be some back and forth, and that's kind of an interesting thing about cell migration in general. There's a sort of a dynamics going on here. You have to be turning things on and off constantly in order to get things to move along. And so our hypothesis is that alpha-I actually regulates cell adhesion by somehow regulating the activation of integrins, but this is something we're actively working on. The data in the paper suggests that alpha-I are regulating adhesion in some way, but we haven't quite figured out how it's regulating adhesion. We know the polarization is through the protein kinase pathway, so alpha-I seems to be doing a couple of interesting things here. And this is the activated form of alpha-I that we're talking about.
In this study, you were looking specifically at neutrophil migration, but GPCR signaling controls migration in a lot of other cell types in other contexts. Do you think that G-alpha is likely to contribute to to migration in other contexts similarly to the way you've seen it contributing in neutrophil migration?
Well, this is something that we're very interested in as well. I mean, there's really two sort of paradigmatic cell types that have been used for examining directional cell migration. One is neutrophil. People have done a lot of work with neutrophils as sort of a basic model for how cell migration works in general. The other cell type that's been used a lot is Dictyostelium, which is an amoeboid-like cell that responds to gradients and moves directionally and polarizes as well. And really, those two systems have been used a lot. And sort of the thinking is that many of the mechanisms that occur in these types of cells also occur in a wide variety of cells, including migrating cancer cells, migrating smooth muscle cells during wound healing, and various other, lots of things require directional cell migration. And so while we don't know for sure, we strongly suspect that alpha will be involved in these things and in other cell types. And so this is something our laboratory is very interested in investigating, and hopefully we'll get another exciting publication out of it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Smirka, for talking with us about your work.
Thank you very much.
That was Alan Smirka discussing a paper published in the February 23rd issue of Science Signaling by Serve and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. Thanks for listening.